Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. This is C.P. McGregor saying, come on in, there are plenty of seats in our Hollywood Theater of Stars. This week we have one of those improbable, fantastic stories which, for all we know, might have actually happened. Its title is Rich Man, Poor Girl. And here on stage we have Elliot Lewis as the rich man and Ona Munson as the poor girl. It's a hilarious combination in which anything can happen. In just a moment, you'll hear the first act of Rich Man, Poor Girl. But first, here's a message from your announcer. Here's Act One of Rich Man, Poor Girl, co-starring Ona Munson and Elliot Lewis. Once upon quite a while ago, there was a young man who lived in the clouds on a steel platform. Well, almost he did. You see, he had a pet house way, way up on top of the whatchamacallit building. His name was David Summers. He was very rich indeed, having been born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Well, not actually, of course, for he'd probably have choked to death. Now, David had a friend whom everybody called Tracy Corrigan because that was his name. And one day, when the white clouds were lying on their backs and floating around David Summers' pet house on top of the whatchamacallit building, Tracy Corrigan dropped in for a chat. And being a rather garrulous fellow, he said,
"Hi-ho, my friend of the deep brown study. Whose murder are you contemplating?"
"Mine."
"Yours? Well, may I beg to ask if that isn't rather a little rough on an old acquaintance?"
"Hmm?"
"How have you planned to do it? They say cyanide is rather quick and not in the least messy. Of course, you may have a little difficulty purchasing cyanide. Some druggists being stuffy people."
"Hmm."
"Oh, my, my. How sour is the wine of life. How feedest the worms upon the trampled spirit."
"Pretty free."
"Look, why don't you cover yourself with your choicest Bond Street sackcloth and we'll toddle out in quest of ashes." Lillian's giving a cocktail party this afternoon."
"Is she?"
"Yeah, and she will shrivel up like a celluloid collar if she knew how enthused you were."
"Lillian would look nice shriveled up."
"Oh, well, come now, Dave. That's practically black magic. Now, come on. Wrench your spirits from their indigo lethargy and let's be gone."
"I'm not going anywhere, Tracy. I'm going to stay here and commune."
"Oh, hearts and flowers. What's the matter with you?"
"Well, may it suffice to say that I'm fed up, right up to here."
"Fed up with what?" retorted Tracy quizzically.
"The whole stupid, indolent, dronish mess."
"Well, that's a lot of adjectives for one mess, Dave, my boy. What's the mess all about?"
"Did it ever occur to you how absolutely useless we are, Tracy?"
"Useless? We toil not, neither do we spin it."
"Exactly. A continuous regimen of cocktail parties of this affair, that affair. What's the sense of it?"
"What's the... I don't know."
"Neither do I. I'm sick of it, Tracy. I'm bored stiff."
"You're bored stiff. Well, isn't that fancy?"
"Yes, well, isn't that fancy?"
"Here you recline in a $5,000 a month penthouse like Rome's Mr. Nero, and you've got all the money there is in the world, and you're bored."
"Yeah. Completely, fundamentally, and beyond any question of a doubt."
"Did it ever enter your cranial vaults That you've got no right to be bored, Mr. Summers? That your lackadaisical existence is justified only when you're not bored.
Fool.
And that you've got no right to be bored. Not with what you've got in life.
Yeah, that's just the point. What have I got in life?
You've got just exactly what 5 million little ants that scurry around downstairs on the sidewalks would give all of their collective right legs for.
Huh?
Oh, stop being a nectar-satiated Jupiter for 5 minutes, will you? As I said before, here you are ho-humming about your unhappy slice of life. While there's at least 5 million people within shouting distance that would give 20 years of their lives merely for the privilege of living for 2 weeks the way you live.
Mm. Well, maybe, but at the same time.
What are you hurrying about?
5 million, hmm?
Well, maybe 4.5 million. Let's not quibble. And don't stare as though your eyes are going to fall out.
Tracy, I've got an idea, I think.
Uh-oh.
You know, I just began to wonder how one of those 5 millions, or 4.5 millions, would act if they had the chance to live for 2 weeks like a stuffed shirt.
I haven't the vaguest idea.
Why don't I find out?
Oh, why don't you stop talking like a mad monk of Mongolia before I call a psychiatrist?
No, Tracy, I'm serious. Supposing I found someone, somebody that had never had anything more in their life. Tracy.
You
make yourself at home. Make yourself at home. Later on, call Lillian. Tell her I've got the measles. I'm going out.
Where are you going?
I don't know exactly.
When are you coming back?
I don't know that either. In a couple of weeks, maybe.
I wonder what it feels like to be bored with too much money, eh? Of course, such things are only put in plays by frustrated writers. They say money isn't everything, but at least it's everything. Well, being bored with such trivia as squab under glass, baked Alaska, and after-dinner Corona Coronas, David Summers floated gently down from his Mount Olympus to dwaddle and daddle with the common hoi polloi. And of course, dwaddling and daddling being strenuous, he got hungry. And like any hungry man in his right mind, he went looking for sustenance.
Your order, please, miss.
I'll have a ham sandwich on rye bread. No lettuce. And a chocolate milkshake.
Yes, miss.
Ham on rye, chocolate cake.
Order been taken, sir? No, I'll have a toasted cheese sandwich on white bread and a glass of milk.
Yes, sir. Toasted cheese sandwich, white.
Hello.
Hmm? Oh, hello.
Hmm. You know, I used to like ham sandwiches once.
Really? How interesting.
And then one night I robbed the icebox and I ate a whole half of a ham all by myself. And ever since then, I've been allergic to ham sandwiches. It's quite a misfortune, don't you think?
Yes, quite.
Mm-hmm. And now, here I am in another rut, nothing but cheese sandwiches. Yeah. Do you like cheese sandwiches?
What?
Yeah, I say, do you like cheese sandwiches?
No.
Oh. I hope you don't mind me talking to you like this, do you?
Oh, no, not in the least. You go right on prattling to your heart's content. It'll make you feel any better.
No, thank you. It's rather nice to chat with someone while you're having lunch aids the digestion, besides being a pleasant custom. Don't you find it that way?
What?
I said, don't you find it that way?
Don't I find what way?
I guess what I said wasn't so very important.
Yours was a ham on rye, miss?
Yes, that's right.
Mustard cheese for you, sir?
Yes, thank you. Do you care for mustard?
No, thank you.
Aren't coincidences the darndest things? Naturally, it was a coincidence when the same young lady and the same young man just happened to meet in front of the Belmo Dress Salon where they advertised exclusive styles. Well, Natch. The young lady was gazing with a covetous eye at the shimmering creation of white tulle and seed pearls. And the young man just walked right up to her and said...
Beautiful dress, isn't it?
What?
I say the dress. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yes. I beg your pardon.
Well, you remember me? We had lunch together yesterday. I'm the toasted cheese sandwich, a bottle of milk. It's coincidental us meeting again, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it?
Well, wait a minute, please.
What for?
I suppose you think I'm pretty fresh talking to you like this.
I haven't given it much thought.
Hey, are you going this way?
What if I am?
Well, I'm going this way, too, and I was wondering if you'd mind if I walked along with you.
Look, I don't know what strange ideas you have, or maybe you're from out of town. If you are, may I suggest you curtail your odd whimsy of talking to strange young ladies? You see, the gendarmes of the city are very narrow-minded.
What do you mean, they'd arrest a man for just being neighborly?
Yes, I'm afraid they would.
Oh. Well, look, I know this will sound a little silly, and you'll probably think I'm stark, staring mad, but I'd like to talk to you about something. And all you've got to do is either say yes or no.
Well, the answer is no. Goodbye.
Oh, but please, please, this isn't a pickup.
You're telling me.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You work around here somewhere in one of these offices.
Look, there's a very big and burly policeman standing in the corner, if you're at all interested.
Where? Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Have me arrested, and I'll go to jail for a million years and languish as a martyr to my own conviction. And you'll have sent an innocent man to an unjust justice.
I haven't the slightest desire to send you or anyone else to jail.
Well, then,
so before I get the desire, let's part the best of company and each go our separate way.
No, I'm stubborn, and I've got an absolute one-track mind. After all, what possible harm could come to you by having me walk with you down Broadway?
That isn't the point. Besides, this is where I work. Goodbye.
Yeah, well, hey, wait a minute. I want to...
Going up. Counter four, going up. There you are. Hey, Stoddard. Yeah?
The girl that just got into that elevator, do you know who she is?
What girl?
The girl that just got in, the blue hat with the thing on it, kind of reddish hair, about so
yeah?
big.
Well, why do you want to know?
Well, that you see, she's... just spoke to me on the street a moment ago, and I can't place her. You know how it is. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, well, I don't know what her name is. She works up on 7 for an insurance company.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Peerless Life and Accident Insurance Company.
Uh-huh. Well, that isn't a coincidence. Here I was practically looking for an insurance policy, the accident kind. One never knows when one's going to need one, does one?
That's right, buddy. Going up, please. Step back in the car, please. Going up, please.
Curtain falls in the first act of Rich Man, Poor Girl, co-starring Ona Munson and Elliot Lewis. In just a moment, you'll hear Act Two. But first, please listen to these words of wisdom from your announcer. Here is Act Two of Rich Man, Poor Girl, co-starring Ona Munson and Elliot Lewis. Well, I guess she thinks he's sort of crazy, and from the way he's been acting, he probably is. Mad as a hatter. One doesn't usually start conversation with young ladies while having a toasted cheese sandwich in a restaurant. Does one or does one? Or does one follow a young lady down Broadway unless one wants the cops called? But that's what he did. In fact, he's now found out where she works, on the 7th floor for the Acme Life and Accident Insurance Company. And where do you think he is now? Uh-huh, that's right. Upstairs on the 7th floor in the Acme Life and Accident Insurance Company. He's in one of those little booths, and he's batting the little service bat bell like crazy. He wants service.
How do you do, sir? May I... Oh.
Hello.
So it's you again.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, please. I'll call the manager.
Oh, no, wait, please. I don't want to talk to the manager. I want to talk to you.
Oh, no, I think you're quite mistaken. I think the manager is just the person you do want to talk
All
to.
All right, I give up. I guess I was just mistaken about people, and especially mistaken about you.
What do you mean by that?
When I first spoke to you in that restaurant yesterday, I could have sworn that you had a little spark of adventure stored away somewhere. You were a little different from the ordinary shallow-brained, humdrum, gum-chewing...
Now look here, I'm not shallow-brained and I'm not humdrum and I don't chew gum.
Well, then what are you afraid of?
I'm not afraid. At least I'm not afraid of you. But I certainly...
All right, then why won't you talk to me for a minute?
Simply because...
Because I'm a stranger and Mother says don't talk to strangers.
Listen,
but
if you...
But it'd be different if someone should happen to introduce us, wouldn't it? All right, so we'll be introduced. Miss So-and-so, may I present Mr. So-and-so? Oh, how do you do? Now, you say, oh, how do you do?
All right, would you mind telling me what it is you want?
Well, that's different. Oh, but promise me one thing, that you'll hear me through and not call the straitjacket people till I finish.
All right, go ahead.
Well, it's just this way. I'm absolutely bored stiff with living.
Well?
And do you know why I'm bored?
I haven't the vaguest idea.
I know, and you don't care. But wait a minute. I'm bored because I've been living in a rut, so to speak. A little different kind of a rut than you've been living
now,
in.
Now, just a minute.
You promised to listen.
Well?
So I decided to try an experiment, and you're it.
Oh, you've chosen me to be the guinea pig for your experiment. Say, when did you get loose, Professor?
Look, do you know what this is?
It looks like a roll of bills. You also go in for counterfeiting?
There's exactly $2,000 there, and it's perfectly genuine United States.
Mm-hmm.
I want to spend those $2,000 in exactly 2 weeks, and I want you to help me.
Well, I'll call a manager. Maybe he can help you.
You promise to listen. I also promise that this is on the level.
Mm-hmm. But what level?
On a very impersonal level. You might even call it a scientific level.
Yes, I might, but I don't think I will.
Yeah. And you know why I picked you for this experiment, Mark?
No.
Because when I first saw you, I noticed that little diamond on your third finger left hand, which usually means the girl's engaged.
Yes, doesn't it?
And the fact that you're working means that friend husband-to-be isn't doing awfully well as yet. But he will. Well, he's a climber, and he'll get places. He's going to be a big man one of these days, but in the meantime...
Yes, go on.
In the meantime, as a little wedding present from a stranger, how would you like to spend 2 weeks in the manner of Miss Celia Gutrocks of Park Avenue?
What? Now, look,
The store club, the paradise, best theaters, dinners by Oscar, everything that a working girl dreams of and envies. A perfect 2 week experience to remember when you finally settle down to keeping house and raising babies and cooking dinner for your adoring husband.
Well, it sounds perfectly... But say, I don't get it.
I know it sounds silly, but as I said before, it's strictly an impersonal proposition, an experiment.
To prove what?
Well, that, I'm sorry, will have to remain my secret. Now, will you do it?
Well, my better judgment tells me no, but there's something about you that makes me think that you're rather sincere about this.
As sincere as... Well, I don't know as what, but...
All right. All right, I'll do it. You're probably very eccentric. And I warn you now, one false move.
I know. Here's my hand on the deal, and where do you live?
Well, I'll meet you somewhere.
All right, 8 o'clock tonight in the foyer of the Waldorf.
I'll be there. Oh, say, what's your name?
Well, to keep it even more strictly impersonal, suppose we dispense with names. My name could be anything. Peter Piper.
All right, Mr. Piper.
And your name? Well, it's quite obvious. Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet eating a ham sandwich on rye bread when along came a spider and sat down beside her and darn near scared Miss Muffet into a conniption fit.
Facing Miss Muffet. Miss Muffet, please. Facing Miss Muffet. Miss
Muffet,
please.
Oh, did you say Miss Muffet, boy?
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Piper was looking for you in the other lobby.
Yes?
He said that if you were here to tell you, he'd be right over to this way.
Are you enjoying yourself, Miss Muffet?
Oh, extremely so, Mr. Piper. But I'm positive I'm going to wake up and find it's not true.
Not for 2 weeks.
Oh, I still can't make any sense out of this. It's just something that doesn't happen to a person. The story of Cinderella's always been just a fable.
And it still is. You're not Cinderella, you're Miss Muffet. And I'm certainly no fairy godmother. I'm Peter Piper, remember?
Uh-oh, speaking of Cinderella, it's 12 o'clock and I've got to go.
All right, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I'll have the doorman call a taxi for you. Play to your taste, my dear Miss Muffet.
Oh, perfectly wonderful, my dear Mr. Piper.
And now how about supper and dancing at the Rainbow Terrace,
Sounds lovely.
My arm, Miss Muffet.
Thank you, Mr. Piper.
And so it went, here, there, and everywhere, with Peter Piper, until that final night ending the 2 weeks. They were sitting in the car in front of her house. The radio was playing, and little Miss Muffet said to Peter Piper,
"You know, all this has been so unreal and mythical. And you haven't yet told me what your experiment has been."
"No."
"But why should you have done all this? What possible reason? I mean, I've had a wonderful time. One that I'll never forget as long as I live."
"If you really mean that, Miss Muffet, I'll classify my experiment as being one notch closer to success."
"Tell me something, Mr. Piper. You've spent $2,000 in 2 weeks on someone that you don't even know. You don't even know my name or anything about me."
"Correction, Miss Muffet. I think I know a great deal about you."
"What?"
"That you're a very lovely and sincere person. That the small things can mean as much as the greater things. that little Miss Muffet can enjoy her curds and whey as well as a breast of pheasant under glass in Poitiers Vintage 26. You see, my experiment has been, well, rather selfish. There are a lot of things I wanted to find out. Now that I've found them out, I'm rather sorry.
Why, Mr. Piper?
Oh, we needn't discuss the whys. It'd spoil things if we did.
Would it? Well, tell me something. Have you just been running away from something? This $2,000 that you've gambled away in this experiment, as you call it. I mean, was it the end of something or the beginning?
Both, I think.
And you're broke now, hmm?
Broke? Yes, yes. Flat broke.
You've been a fool, Mr. Piper.
Mm-hmm, perhaps. I should like to go on being a fool for the rest of my life. It's nice being a fool.
Since you gave your word to, well, to keep everything strictly impersonal, and I didn't, could I ask you a question?
What do you mean?
Could I ask if you'd like to duplicate the past 2 weeks, or to stretch them into 2 years? You needn't answer if you don't wish to.
I don't wish to, Miss Muffet.
All right. But you have answered the question.
What?
Say, incidentally, how would you like to come to my wedding next week?
Is that when it's going to be?
Oh, I think so. Will you come?
Well,
I'll send you an invitation. Oh, wait, where would I send it? Oh, I know, to the Waldorf, where we met that first night. I'll address it to Mr. Peter Piper.
All right. And if I can, I'll come and wish you luck at your wedding.
Oh, thanks. Now I think I'd better go in.
Who's Peter Piper?
Me?
You. Oh, fine alias.
Open it, will you, and read it.
Well, what's the matter? You lost your sight?
No. Just open it and read it, and then I'll tell you what it's all about.
Okay. But reading other people's mail isn't my usual habit.
I wondered about that.
Now, let me see. Mr. and Mrs. Hey, what the devil's this?
What?
Oh, it sounds screwy to me. It says, Mr. and Mrs. Muffet request your presence at the marriage of their daughter, Miss Sarah Muffet, to Mr. Peter Piper.
What?
The marriage will take place in Judge Halcott's chambers Monday the 30th, providing Mr. Peter Piper will show up.
What? Hey, give me that.
This is what goes on.
Mr. P.S., this is not compulsory. And as far as that engagement ring was concerned, it was my mother's. And as long as you stuck to your word of being strictly impersonal, the best I can do is to be strictly personal and do the proposing myself with love, Miss Muffet.
Well, are you two young people just going to stand there and stare at each other? You'll have a lifetime for that, you know.
Mr. Piper, I guess I shouldn't have sent that silly letter. That is, I mean, if you've come here just because...
Because wild horses couldn't have kept me away. That was the most important letter of my life.
Are you sure?
Yes, positive. And to prove it, here are the words that should have been said a long time ago. I love you, Miss Muffet.
What is all this?
Oh, nothing, Judge, except that I was afraid there might not be a wedding. I was afraid that maybe this was going to be the time when little Miss Muffet scared the spider away.
Final curtain rings down on our play Rich Man, Poor Girl, co-starring Ona Munson and Elliot Lewis. In a moment, I'll return on stage to give you some highlights about our star and play for next week's drama in the Hollywood Theater of Stars. But first, here are some interesting words by your announcer. Thank you, Ona and Elliot. That was a performance that practically stopped the clock and as well renewed our faith in the fairy tale ending. And so they lived happily ever after. We'll be looking forward to having you join us again very soon in our Hollywood Theater of Stars. You were wonderful, and to use a Hollywood idiom, somewhat out of this world. Goodbye for now. Ladies and gentlemen, let's have a quick look at our call board for next week. Our star will be Martha O'Driscoll, and our play, one slightly extraordinary, called A Penny Saved. You'll enjoy it right up to here, believe me. So be with us, won't you? Until then, this is C.P. McGregor saying thanks for listening and cheerio from Hollywood.